Aalto University Podcast.
In addition to being a key part of the green energy transition, the hydrogen economy has been hyped as a potential goldmine and creator of jobs by industry pundits and governments alike. But investments have been slower and smaller than initially anticipated. Stories about the death of the hydrogen hype have been piling up in the media lately. Why is this? Is the hydrogen economy takeoff really stalling? And what roles, regulation, incentives and investments play in all this? I'm Mikko Heiskala, a visiting researcher at the Department of Industrial Engineering and Management at Aalto University, Finland. I research digital platforms and ecosystems. I was looking at how these could help hydrogen economy take off and what Hydrogen Valley had to do with it in the Baltic Sea H2 Hydrogen Valley project. But to do that, I had to move away from my comfort zone of digital and bits to a world of atoms, molecules and electrons to understand the emerging hydrogen economy and what makes it tick. Join me on this journey in the Hydrogen Valley podcast. We all know that money makes the world go round and that regulatory red tape can be a hindrance. I was curious to find out how industry experts saw the role of investments and regulation in hydrogen economy takeoff and what their take was on the initial hype surrounding hydrogen on the one hand and the more pessimistic media stories of late on the other. I first wanted an investor perspective on these issues and invited Christian Langen for an interview. Christian has about
20 years of business experience in all things clean tech, that includes hydrogen technologies. I'm also an executive in residence at Aalto University here, where I co-teach a course on innovation in energy that's called Energy Linkage.
Many experts have seen hydrogen, and particularly green hydrogen, as something that could be upending the energy industry and playing a leading role in decarbonizing large segments of our economy and energy infrastructure. What do you see as the key factors driving this kind of enthusiasm and optimism, we could say, maybe, surrounding hydrogen?
First of all, I would say it's a deeply human trait to look for a silver bullet to your biggest problems. Mm. And we've seen that in many, many contexts. So it's a solution many people just want to see for a variety of reasons. If you take a step back, I think what we're seeing right now is a competition or even a fight between the upcoming and growing electron world, where electrons are being generated in a renewable way directly, versus the molecule world that comes from coal, oil, fossil fuels, gas, everything that is related to molecules. Our energy world has been driven by molecules for 150 years. And there's a lot of infrastructure that has been built for this. A lot of business models that depend on creating molecules of all kind. Now, there's a fight for keeping those business models, using that capacity and the investments, while at the same time, the direct electron production via wind, solar, hydro, all types of technologies is gaining ground. Mm. So hydrogen is, for many people, the one answer that helps them to perpetuate their business model of molecules into a new world that is cleaner. Mm. And that's why it gets so much attention, gets a lot of lobbying activity. It is part of the solution, absolutely. However, at this point, I feel that a lot of it is overhyped. Many of the applications you hear don't really make sense because there are better alternatives, often directly from the electron world, like, for example, hydrogen buses or any types of mobility that's not big ships or is simply using batteries and electricity is simply the better solution. It will not be competitive at any point in time. So I think it is this perspective of how do we use the competencies, the structure, the infrastructure we have with a new molecule that leads to this push that unfortunately goes towards a hype right now.
Do you see climate change and global warming to contribute to this optimism or wanting to see this happen?
it's clear that we need to use no fossil fuels, ideally, or a little as possible, keep it in the ground. But green hydrogen in particular is one of the most promising avenues of replacing, particularly in industrial processes.
Mm.
So, yes, the climate is the big driver here. Also regulatory, that's the reason for a lot of this support. But it's not the wonder material many people tell us. And the hydrogen economy itself, I think it will start from a few places where it's competitive today or very soon. And from there, it will grow.
What would you then see if you now put your investor hat in? Because I know you've been in the investing, wearing that hat quite a bit in your career. So what do you see as the realistic use cases given the current state of hydrogen technology and the overall hydrogen economy?
The most promising use cases are those where green hydrogen can replace any other color hydrogen, particularly gray hydrogen. That is in refining, in hydrogenation processes in industry, in fertilizer and ammonia production, possibly somewhere in methanol, although there we get already to places where biomass or biogas may be the better solution. There may be in the future, with prices coming down for this, use cases in long-haul shipping, long-haul aviation gets already really tricky, chemical feedstocks, primary steel, but that's about it. Is my personal take. Many of the other use cases you hear are really difficult to make work economically. And from an investor perspective, it's very tricky right now because you're being told that hydrogen is the solution for everything. At the same time, we'll start to see the first hydrogen companies collapse, many projects not getting financing because investors are just unsure. Where can I put my money? They are looking for how do I take out this risk? And the key risk is, the one is technology risk, but that you could say electrolyzers work. Okay, there's more like a cost pathway whether you can achieve that. The bigger risk is so-called takeoff risk. And who is willing to say, I'll take your product for the next 10, 15 years at this price?
Mm. All right.
That's the bottleneck right now. So we don't have enough demand that is firm enough for an investor to say, all right, this is where I can put my money because the future cash flows are reasonably secure.
So you mentioned this uncertainty for the investor, anybody wearing the investor hat. Sounds a bit psychological as well. So do you see there's this psychological effect?
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, I think the current state of how we talk about hydrogen, how we touted as the silver bullet, is not really helpful.
Mm.
There will be a lot of negative stories ultimately coming out of this overinflated expectation. And those are the phases when investors just sit on their hands and don't do much. So even the good projects will be in trouble to finding finance. Mm. So I personally think some of the industrial players who really want to have that molecule business model need to put some of their equity and money to work. Mm. And then they will start to find investors with every step of de-risking this chain. And we should, as soon as possible, be honest to ourselves and stop with promoting things that really don't fit to hydrogen. Hydrogen is realistically not a solution.
Mm. You mentioned these off-takers as well. So this, to me, begins to sound like that we need quite a few players and hopefully kind of at the same time frame to move forward, both on the producing side, transportation of hydrogen, the infrastructure and these things. Would that be then alleviating the risk if we get this kind of, let's say, momentum going on, at least in those realistic cases that you see?
The entry barrier is quite high. Mm. So you need to have big industrial infrastructure to make hydrogen or green hydrogen at a scale. Mm. Unlike, for example, in solar power. I mean, why did solar power take off so much recently? Mm. It's because it's completely decentralized. Mm. The 10,000 people today on this day make the decision of putting up a solar system either on their house or in their factory or somewhere. And that's like activity that's under the radar, but 10,000 decisions have been made today to do this. For hydrogen, depending on where you are in this supply chain, the entry level is really high. You need to commit a high amount of capital. So that increases the need for some sort of stability of offtake industrial partner location and the energy supply, the clean energy supply. There's, for me, there's a bit of a conundrum. The business models of many hydrogen plays say, okay, we have all the time, we use all this clean energy that's during the day often for free. Yes, that's true. It's often free for a few hours a day.
Mm.
But your big infrastructure needs to run basically 24/7 to make sense. So the clean energy supply, competition with data centers for clean energy supply,
yeah.
All these aspects that are now shifting. So it's a very dynamic field, and dynamic emerging things are always tough for investors.
What's your take on what kind of investors would be the ones that are investing in hydrogen and the green energy?
That's a good question. I think we need to look at what are the properties of these hydrogen projects to see what are the fitting investors. Basically, it is deep technology plus infrastructure. So at the same time, it's still at an early stage without a long track record. So some of the hydrogen startups are looking for venture capital. I personally think that is not a fitting choice, because the typical venture capital model doesn't really work well with deep tech that needs to be scaled and developed over a longer time.
Why is that?
Well, venture capital funds have like 6, 7, 8 years time. They invest for a few years and then they need to find an exit place for a few years. And during that time, they need to grow like really fast. So this hydrogen thing takes longer time to develop. It's deeper technologies. It's bigger tickets. The return expectations are possibly too high on venture capital, and the patience is lacking to build this industrial base. It's industrial investment. Actually, there's a lot of steel and things involved that need to be put together if you're investing in this.
Yeah.
So it is more infrastructure. Now, infrastructure investors, they are very risk-oriented. Venture capitalists, and that's the positive thing, are opportunity-oriented. So they would say, all right, I understand there's a tech risk, but there's also an opportunity, I'll go for it. The infrastructure investor side, the really large ones that build like roads, finance roads and bridges and all kind of things, also grids, they really look at risk. Mm. So it has to be completely de-risked before it is interesting.
Mm.
And that hydrogen cannot offer at this point because there's not enough track record, not enough security going forward. So it's a little bit stuck in between these.
Mm.
And the place where I would start looking is, number one, industrial players who have a business model to defend.
Mm.
They have the capital. They should actually start deploying it this way, maybe with some public procurement or guarantees or some small help in there to overcome the initial risk perception. And then it can find its way towards those larger infrastructure investors and private equity. But it's not a good fit for VC today and not yet a good fit for those. So that's one tricky spot right now, but it can be navigated if industry steps up.
Do you see a role for the public sector there? Say EU or national governments?
Well, you can say it's a strategic industry. So how have we supported strategic industries in the past? There are different means. My personal view is reducing the support for the not-so-clean alternatives is the first step. And otherwise, I think that a CO2 price can do most of the job.
I guess so. Climate change, global warming, the negative externalities are felt by everyone, but they're not maybe priced directly into these individual investments.
Yes, these external effects are one of the main reasons why we are not further than we are now. Mm. If it doesn't cost you anything, the results of your actions, they don't reach your pocket, then you're less enticed to do something about it, unfortunately.
So we're not there yet, the hydrogen economy. That's my take of what you said before. So what would you see as this kind of biggest risks for investors considering hydrogen-related investments?
Yeah, I think the way investors look at it is, first of all, does the technology work? I think there we're getting to a point where one can say the principal technology works, although there's always still a lot of improvement. So did I pick the right one? Did I invest into something that'll be obsolete 5 years from down the road? That's one risk. The other one, is the application really sustainable and commercially sustainable? Because ultimately, if we are successful in the hydrogen economy, hydrogen will be a commodity. Mm. And it will follow the similar pricing and commodity rules as other products. So
it's the most common element in the universe.
It is. So
by definition.
So investors will look at it the same way as they look at other commodities right now. And there you have risk of swings. So you need to have a certain appetite for this type of price risk without actually having a track record yet. That's the challenging bit. For everything where you can say, oh, the last 10 years, they were like this. We think the next 5 years will be like that. Is easier to say than, hey, this is the wonderful future. It looks great in Excel.
Mm. Okay, hydrogen as such would be a commodity. How do you see these different derivatives or derivative markets of hydrogen where we are providing different e-fuels, for example?
I think the pressure comes from several sides. There's a big push towards how do we make this abundant renewable energy that exists in some places already. I mean, Spain during the day, power is for free, comes from solar and wind here. In Finland, a lot of wind power. How do we turn that basically free electricity into something valuable? That is one of the main drivers behind how do we turn this into a molecule that has a different kind of value. So that's the one thing. The push comes from the renewable side. On the other side, I think that the use cases in the industry, if you are one of the first, you have a good reputation effect. If the policy fits and it makes economic sense, you will really be seen as innovative. You will move into a new world while the others are lagging. So I think there are drivers. The question is, who makes the first step? Who takes the initial risk? Who has the courage? Also from the fossil fuel industry, who's got more conviction to make some selective investments, take on some more risk, even though it costs you in the short term potentially, because these projects take time.
How can we get this risk down? Do you see a role for regulation, for example, there? Putting a price on the carbon emissions, for example.
Yes, the carbon, the ETS system, the new one that is strengthening this clearly, and they will step up the carbon price. So it will make green hydrogen more competitive simply by making the alternatives more costly. That doesn't automatically improve your competitiveness on a global scale because it depends on who else is doing that and how do you have this interchange. But as I said before, I think as you cannot really easily ship hydrogen. It's different than oil and other things. There's a good opportunity to build this industry in Europe. At the same time, looking back at, for example, the solar and wind industries, providing some CapEx and OpEx support in the beginning, driving this innovation, co-funding some initial hydrogen infrastructure is an okay way to start that. We just cannot lose our focus into where it will have its opportunity and where it fits best.
Mm-hmm.
I think it should start with a clear definition of what actually green hydrogen is.
Mm.
We talk about all these colors and then people, of course, pushing towards and use nuclear power for this and use this and that. So we need to have a very clear definition. What is it that we want to have?
Yeah.
And ultimately then create a level playing field. Personally, I think the biggest help for hydrogen would be to reduce all types of indirect fossil fuel subsidies that exist that people really don't have on their radar very much. But it's still the same thing that there's a lot of hidden subsidies that go towards there. So if you want to foster the new solution, then stop supporting the old and dirty one.
Mm.
I think hydrogen can stand on its own if it follows the same innovation model that starts in the niche where it's quickly adapted and then grows from there and scales from there. The technology still has a lot of potential for cost reductions. Mm. The whole delivery and supply chain still has. Right now, I think we're just getting lost in the noise.
Mm.
And that's a risky place.
So you are hopeful. as well, not all doom and gloom.
No, so I'm not all doom and not all doom and gloom. Yeah. I feel.
What makes you hopeful for the hydrogen to take off?
It is clearly a solution that has its place, and in history, if there is a clear solution that has its place, it has found its way at some point.
Yeah.
In some way. So I'm hopeful that in the right sectors, hydrogen, green hydrogen, will be able to take off.
Yeah.
At the same time, there'll be a lot of disappointments for people who put their focus on the wrong parts of this. Mm. I see a lot of top-level discussion without looking into the physics. I mean, nobody's going to change thermodynamics. Mm. You got to take it.
Anytime
you got to take it for what it, you know, for what it is. So, how do we sort the wheat from the chaff? If we manage that successfully, then hydrogen has a very bright spot.
After my discussion with Christian Langen, I also wanted to get an industry perspective on the status of the hydrogen economy and the related investments and regulation. So I invited Janne Pelio to discuss these issues with me. Janne comes
from the Confederation of Finnish Industries. So basically, we are the umbrella organization for all industry associations in Finland, representing industries ranging from commerce and trade to technology industries and energy. I work as the climate policy analyst. So basically, what I do is I monitor the climate policy landscape and its interlinkages with economy and the kind of business environment of Finnish corporations, both in Finland and abroad.
Green hydrogen is seen as a big opportunity for Finland as well. Yet, it seems that investments are a bit lacking or are behind the earlier hype, at least I've been reading these kind of newspaper stories quite a bit recently.
Yeah.
In your opinion, is this so, or why not?
Yeah, it's a funny thing. We started really talking about hydrogen in Finland maybe 4-3 years ago, and then everyone seems to expect that it would have solved all our problems already.
Yeah.
But we're talking about huge industrial investments, and if you benchmark from other industrial investments we've done in Finland over the past decade, which are too few, sorry to say, but anyhow, those have taken decades of planning, or decade at least of planning and construction. So now, if we started hydrogen hype in Finland, say in 2022-2023, we're way too early to see whether and how many of these projects will materialize. But I'm confident that within 36 months, we will hear major investment decisions on hydrogen production in Finland, and that will set the kind of tone for the future years in hydrogen in Finland.
So it's a bit kind of picking the right mindset or time frame for analyzing this kind of industrial development that we are talking about.
Yeah. Of course, it would be extremely nice if everything would happen like with a snap of your fingers.
Yeah.
But I think the first kind of major hydrogen projects in Finland were announced to be planned in 2023, maybe. So that's only 2 years ago. And if you take just the industrial permitting processes, they tend to take at least 5 years all in all. So despite all the push and hype around hydrogen, it's way too early to say whether it was boom and bust or whether it's up and coming.
Okay, you mentioned permitting there. It's one part of regulation. How do you see the role of regulation in helping or hindering hydrogen economy investments and getting the ball rolling?
I think at least at this very first stages of hydrogen, it's crucial. But we all need to recognize that green hydrogen or clean hydrogen or pink, whatever you want to call it, but kind of developing these new hydrogen projects and products is going to be much more expensive than the incumbent technologies are. Mm. So nowadays, majority of hydrogen globally is produced from natural gas. And it's estimated that it's roughly 2 euros per kilo in Europe. And then green hydrogen is estimated to cost 6 euros per kilo. Mm. So there is quite a significant price premium for the greener stuff. And we have to get that covered somehow. And I think that in the first stage, the regulation policy push around the sector is immensely important in driving the first projects up and running. And then over time, as technology is mature, we gain more knowledge on how to implement hydrogen production in scale. And then we reach economies of scale in electrolyzer manufacturing or other equipment. Then that will start pushing down the prices, and then we can kind of alleviate the kind of policy and regulation side. But at the first stage, policy and regulation environment is crucial in ramping up new and nascent industries.
Regulation is also aiming to take environmental outcomes into the equation.
Yeah.
So how do you see this kind of, what kind of regulation there should be?
Yeah, it's not about quantity, it's more about quality. What we need at this stage is clarity on the kind of next decade of hydrogen use in Europe. And that's what we hope that the European Commission will be able to clarify over the next year or so. So basically, we need to align what is the common vision for Europe, that how much of hydrogen we want to have in our markets, and what are the markets where we want to see hydrogen start up first, and then how do we incentivize the production, which is lacking in competitiveness against the incumbent technologies. And of course, the regulation at the same time, it has to be able to align both environmental interests and then commercial interests. So we have to be able to leniently and swiftly get permissions and regulatory approvals for hydrogen projects to get them up and running, and not to waste too much time and money on planning stages. But at the same time, we don't want to end up in a situation where hydrogen production is causing a lot of environmental damage in other sectors. So it's a balancing exercise, but I think Finland has a very good approach to this in national regulation, and I'm confident that Finland, of all places, will be in the top in leading the transition.
If you would compare regulation related to hydrogen to a bit earlier renewable industries like wind or solar, do you see any kind of similarities or comparisons that you could make?
Yes and no. First of all, we did not have European-wide stimulation packages for wind and solar. We had European-wide targets for renewable energy and renewable electricity. We had targets of kind of ramping up those capabilities and capacities. We had technology-specific targets, but we did not have technology-specific incentives for wind across Europe. So basically, we used to stick to the good practice of allowing EU countries to decide on their energy policies nationally. And now we're seeing a bit of a deviation from that practice by European Commission really taking steps forward in saying that hydrogen is one of the key cornerstones of our modern energy system, which is aiming to go towards carbon neutrality by 2050. Mm. And hence, EU is setting up a lot of incentives. To be honest, I'm not sure if I like it or not. I understand that we are competing against kind of other countries in ramping up hydrogen. Everyone is seeing the same promise that hydrogen will be a major force in the decarbonization efforts of European industries. That's going to be evident. And we are seeing that other countries such as Spain and Portugal or Germany and Netherlands are really putting emphasis on attracting hydrogen-related investments and hydrogen projects. So if we go into this kind of national competition over grants and subsidies, it's going to be a welfare loss for the whole of Europe. Mm. So I do like the principle of European coordination, but I'm not sure if I like the understanding of European officials picking winning sectors and kind of directing subsidies specifically aimed at specific industries.
Okay, how do you see then, what are the main current regulatory mechanisms that shape hydrogen projects in Europe?
I think it's actually a soup of different legislation and regulation, but one of the key regulation pieces is the delegated acts on hydrogen. So basically, those acts define what's the color of your hydrogen. So whether you can call it green hydrogen or whether it's a low carbon hydrogen, which is then a mixture of different processes for producing that. Europe seems to be obsessed with defining and standardizing stuff, and this is of course one step in that direction. So we're now defining what's green and clean hydrogen. And then in other parts of the regulation, then we are setting up mandates on how much of green hydrogen should be used in different sectors.
Mm.
So I have sympathies for that structure, but it appears that in practice it becomes somewhat restricting in the level of detail that the regulation holds in it. But what's going to drive the demand for hydrogen, especially for the next decade, it's the mandates that have been regulatorily put in place. So it's the use of hydrogen or synthetic fuels in aviation, in road transport, and in maritime transport. So that's one huge sector where European Commission sees that hydrogen is going to be used in the future, and that's the regulation that's going to drive up these markets when the regulation is clear and ready.
We touch a little bit about subsidies and incentives as well here. How do you see their role, and would they be working?
Green hydrogen is losing in competitiveness against natural gas-based hydrogen. And that's the gap that we need to be able to fill somehow. I'm confident that technology development and innovations will help us drive that gap lower. But at the first stage, subsidies are going to be needed to get the first projects up and running. So I think this is a textbook case for using subsidies. So we are having projects that include a lot of new technology risks. Many of these projects are first of their kind. So there is a kind of societal benefit that we get this project ongoing so that we learn from them, and then we can kind of disseminate those innovations across the value chain to other projects as well, and hence make it more efficient. But for individual investors or companies, those risks might be too hard to handle. So that's justification for government intervention in terms of subsidies. But over time, I would like to see that there is one leading policy framework in Europe that has been proven to be functional, and that's driving a majority of emission reductions in the sectors that it covers. So it's the EU emissions trading system. So over time, let's take steel, for example. Steel production nowadays emits a huge amount of fossil emissions just because of the nature of the production process. But we will be needing steel also in the future, and actually in increasing amounts as we decarbonize our economies. So we need to be able to kind of push the steel sector to become less emission intensive. And that's where hydrogen will have a very important role. But as of now, the prices of EU emissions trading units are not high enough to incentivize investments in green hydrogen. So we need a mixture of different policies, but over time, we should just, you know, fall back to having a price signal that's carbon trading or carbon pricing, and that would ideally cover everything in terms of the market.
So an early push and then taking a seat back.
Yeah. Markets will function when they're allowed to function. Taking, for example, wind power as an example. Nationally, in Finland, we had a very lavish feed-in tariff for wind power to kind of kick off the sector. At the time when they were set up, they weren't thought to be lavish. They were, you know, with the best knowledge of that time, they considered that this is the kind of fair amount of subsidies that will be needed. Mm. But over time, technology development then was much faster than anticipated, and that was driving down the prices of implementing wind power. Mm. And hence, in hindsight, you can say that they were quite large in terms of individual support for individual production units. But as of now, already for many years, wind power in Finland has been built completely and solely without subsidies. So no subsidies are needed, and nobody wants these subsidies, and everyone wants to, you know, just play with the market, and that's where carbon pricing is driving emission-intensive electricity production out of the system, and it's going to be complemented with the latest and best-performing technologies, which nowadays seem to be wind and solar.
Okay. Permitting, like, for example, approving new hydrogen production plants, their location and such, has also been mentioned as a potential bottleneck.
Yep.
What's your take on the role of permitting?
Generally speaking, it's very important.
And this is more local level. Municipalities typically, I guess.
Yeah, but then it also, of course, adheres to national and even EU regulation on what has to be considered within the permitting process. But the thing with the green transition is that we want to see our economy decarbonize much faster than it would otherwise decarbonize. Kind of if we just let it flow with the market, it would be decarbonized over time, but the time would be much too long when we compare what's coming from the environmental and climate science side. So we have a hurry, or we have a burning hurry in terms of curbing climate change. And that's why we need to be faster and smoother in terms of getting these projects up and running. Permitting is of virtue a static process. So it's very considerate of all possible impacts that an industrial activity might have. And it's made basically, or at least I see that it's made for a static environment where we don't have a generally overarching national interest of doing something faster. So hence permitting processes, they tend to take their time. A lot of details need to be covered, and just by nature, we rather want to be sure that no negative impacts are being caused, or if something is that we don't know, we want to further dig deeper into understand it in full. And with new technologies such as hydrogen, where we don't have much of experience in existing projects and investments and industrial activity in Finland, we come up with a lot of new questions on security, on safety, on planning of those production sites. And that's where we need to be agile and smart in terms of permitting as well. So I would like to see permitting processes turn more to a consultative dialogue between the regulatory authority and the project engineer or project designer, rather than the black box of yes or no, if this technology solution is acceptable, or whether these emissions are acceptable, but rather a dialogue on how do we concretize and materialize these projects in a way that they are beneficial for the environment and surrounding society, but in a way that they can be implemented smoother and faster.
So if I rephrase that last point there, you would see it's better that it's not like something, an application thrown over the bureaucratic wall and then just waiting for it to happen. And it's on both sides of that wall to accelerate the process.
Yeah.
Both the applicants, the project developers, and the regulatory side. Okay, you said this is also a new.
Yeah.
Would it be then beneficial somehow to, okay, there's the legislation that should be in place that covers these issues, but this knowledge of the process and just like the how to accelerate the process on both sides, what should be done there?
Yeah.
Or could be done there?
I think Finland is a good case or good example of a country where permitting is relatively good. When we do benchmarking against our peers in Germany, Netherlands, or even Sweden, funnily enough, we tend to see that actually Finland is not the worst case in the whole of Europe. So actually a lot of international investors, they give credit to our authorities on handling and the permitting processes and different stages of it. But especially now that we are against a new topic, we haven't had these electrolyzer facilities, let alone synthetic fuel production in Finland ever before. So we need to be able to run the process in a way that both the project developers and then the municipal and regulatory authorities are learning at the same time and jointly collaborating. And that's maybe a bit of a new culture for the regulatory approach.
Hmm. Hydrogen economy is not just about hydrogen. It, of course, needs electricity, clean water for production. Demand needs to be there as well. For example, in green steel production and production of different e-fuels with green hydrogen, we need biogenic carbon dioxide for the derivatives production as well. And I hear words like sector integration and sector coupling a lot, and their role in boosting hydrogen economy. So if this value chain is related to hydrogen economy are so, or should be so, interconnected, do you see issues with the regulation as well? Is that interconnected? Is there like opportunities or potential difficult to see bottlenecks?
I think we are becoming more interlinked in terms of energies and different commodities. So the sector coupling or sector integration, despite being a very horrible word, but it's but yeah. It is something that's already ongoing. We see that already in our heat production sectors. So it's not the traditional way that you have CHP plants, you know, so combined heat and power, and you just run it based on the heat load, and then you dump the electricity as a side product. But it's rather that you start seeing this electrification of heat sector. You start seeing recovered heat from industrial processes increasingly used in district heating and all that. And then when we come to hydrogen, hydrogen is actually linking a lot of sectors where interlinkages haven't been that strong in the past. So let's take a synthetic methane production site. You need feedstock such as the green hydrogen. And for the green hydrogen, you need electricity and water. And that's kind of already linking a lot of kind of raw materials or feedstock inputs. But at the same time, you need the biogenic CO2. And then you put them together and mix and match. And then you come up with a synthetic fuel that you can use in heavy transport. And as a side product, then you get heat that you can basically use in district heating processes as well. And at the same time, as the electricity system around the hydrogen production plant is becoming more volatile in terms of prices and production, the hydrogen production facility should be able to flex with the electricity system. So that's a lot of new functions or a lot of new items that you need to optimize at the same time.
So hydrogen is very connected, especially to the electricity. Do you see this kind of a regulatory or other kind of dependencies?
Yeah, at least in terms of the energy market dependencies, those are actually super interesting. We are entering in our Nordic electricity market into a phase where we are adding a lot of renewable capacity that's quite variable. And despite, of course, there's not perfect correlation between wind power production in Finland and Denmark. So having a market area already gives us a bit of diversification benefits, coupled with, of course, the hydropower production capacities in Norway and Sweden. They make our electricity market very attractive in terms of new electricity demand. But at the same time, the profile of the production is shifting. It's not baseload production anymore, but it's more the price is being set by wind and solar, and the price volatility is going to be here for years to come. So it's interesting to see that if you look at the numbers where, for example, Finland's electricity consumption is estimated to double within a decade, mainly driven by data centers and then especially hydrogen production. It's evident that the electricity market at large will benefit immensely if the new capacities will be capable of providing flexibility in the market. So the debate is whether you need to run an electrolyzer or hydrogen facility 8,000 hours a year, or whether you can flex it up and down and maybe kind of use it only or run it only for 6,000 hours. And if you add a portfolio of different hydrogen facilities in Finland and you assume that they can optimize their electricity production against the prices and production of electricity in the market, it's a completely different electricity system than it would be that in a variation where those would be only baseload capacities. Meaning that the electrolyzers would be running 8,000 hours a year. So this is a very interesting discussion, and analysts are debating now heavily what's going to be the kind of winning business case in the future. Is it going to be that your facilities are flexing, or whether that they constantly run? And my bet is that flexibility will be the winning argument. So those operators in the market who will be able to cope with the price variability in the market in electricity and will be able to optimize their own production processes to better be aligned with the electricity market production kind of profile, those will be the winners. And those will be technologies that we can then also export from Finland to other parts of the world. So in terms of regulation, we just need to allow the markets to optimize.
If you had a policy magic wand, what would be your top priorities to solve or change to accelerate the hydrogen economy takeoff?
I think there are a few key components that need to be in place. The first one is that you need to have a credible outlook for the next 15 to 20 years on the industrial decarbonization. And that's, I think, to some extent already being kind of covered by the EU ETS. So if you have a kind of upward sloping price curve for emissions, then increasingly those whose operations incur emissions are then thinking whether it would be this year or next year that we invest in process to get rid of the emissions and hence the emission payments. So kind of getting the long-term outlook and price mechanism, that's the backbone. At the same time, acknowledging that it will not be enough, at least for the next 10 years or so, we need to push the technology development and especially the technology kind of development in scale. So that then leads towards incentives in terms of new projects, whether it's direct grants for hydrogen and its derivatives and those investments, whether it's incentives and actual grants for R&D and then of kind of scale-up investments, and whether it's also a mixture of tax incentives for green industrial investments. We in Finland have now taken into our toolkit. I think it's a combination of those. The limitations come from the fiscal balance. So should the magic wand be also able to just, you know, get rid of the fiscal gloom that we are in, I would start pushing hefty subsidies for building up new capabilities and clusters with a very limited time frame. Because the subsidies need to be able to stimulate investment activity that would otherwise take place later or in smaller scale, and we want to see those happen faster and in larger scale. So then incentives in place to support the kind of long-term vision and long-term emission pricing.
I was talking with Christian Langen earlier on in this episode, and he pointed out from an investor viewpoint this hype around hydrogen might be a little bit counterproductive, at least in terms of where much of different use cases where it's bandied about, and some might not be so, at least in his opinion, realistic. And this kind of creates just uncertainty in investor viewpoint. What's your take on regulation or in relation to this uncertainty in general?
I think that's a fair comment. Hydrogen has been hyped as a kind of silver bullet to everything. There's a crowd that thinks that passenger vehicles will be running with hydrogen. Mm. I personally very strongly doubt that. It's just about energy economics that electricity and batteries will be dominant in that scene. And hydrogen has been pushed to a lot of applications where it does not make economic sense. Mm. I think it's unfair to say that hydrogen hype has led to a situation where the hydrogen industry has died. But at the same time, we've seen the hydrogen hype to give birth to a lot of hydrogen-related startups and companies and projects that weren't really on a solid basis in the first phase at all. So you need to be considerate and careful in kind of understanding the logic on where you can actually use hydrogen. Some say that hydrogen is the champagne of the green transition. I think that's a nice point in a way that, of course, I could wash my windows with champagne, but for obvious reasons, I don't. So champagne is to be used only in a very specific circumstance, and that's where I think hydrogen is also being directed to. So in those applications where no other option is competitive against hydrogen-related production or option.
And regulation, of course, has the role of reducing the overall uncertainty.
And regulation, of course, that's the target for aviation, for example. There are blending mandates being planned on how much ESAFs or synthetic sustainable aviation fuels the aviation sector should be using in 2030s and onwards. And the same applies to the use of hydrogen in domestic road transport, and Finland has set a mandate for that. And I think those are good in terms of giving credibility to the market that there is an existing demand. because it's regulatedly in place. So regulation says that there is this size of a demand pool that, that needs to be filled, and then investors invest in production. But there is point of caution in a way that regulation needs to be right. So regulation should not push hydrogen or anything else to use cases where it's not financially or energy economy-wise beneficial.
After my discussion with Christian Langen and Janne Peli, I began to wonder if the view I had gotten from media about the hydrogen economy was too pessimistic, and whether this had been influenced by the sometimes excessive pessimism of my fellow Finns. So I asked an alumnus of the Department of Industrial Engineering and Management, Jan Feller, to provide me with a German perspective. Jan is the
CEO of the German-Finnish Chamber of Commerce, and we have 650 member companies in the very active hydrogen group, where we are bringing German and Finnish companies together to build the joint hydrogen economy.
With previous guests, I've discussed issues like unwarranted hype around hydrogen and subsequent uncertainty for investors. They are, you know, is this happening for real or not? Which horses should we bet? And these kind of issues. Also, the national and EU level regulation related to hydrogen economy and its connected industry are still in development, for some parts of it at least. Is this reflective of the mood around hydrogen in Germany as well?
I mean, first I have to say, you know, we have had this discussion, is there a new hydrogen winter coming, right? I have a tech background and a strategy business background, and usually when you see a new market developing, you always have a hype curve in the beginning. Then you have a phase of realism where unrealistic projects get killed and so on. And then you find actually a market which is then developing. My view is we thought we were in hydrogen summer 2 years ago or 1 year ago. I think we're in hydrogen spring now. And as living in Finland, we know that spring means sunshine and snowfall, right? And then we are going to go ahead into a summer at some stage. When you look at Germany, though, I think there's a key difference. Here in Finland, we are still finding ourselves thinking, okay, is this whole hydrogen economy just, you know, a blob? Is it going to fade away and so on? When you go to Germany, you can actually see it's already happening. They are already building the 9,000 kilometers core network of hydrogen pipelines. You see the government is pushing for that core network, 20 billion euro investments. You see companies like EnBW, a huge electricity utility, they are investing 40 billion euros. There are already standards on how to repurpose pipes and how to test those pipes. And you see Germany is actually actively already now getting hydrogen partnerships with other countries. There is pipeline plans with the UK, how to get green hydrogen or clean hydrogen. The new government has announced steps on speeding up the whole hydrogen permitting around. You see this core network, for example, they made the construction decision in fall 24. There is, of course, the discussions, will we be able to proceed in that speed, right? We had the Greens in the government before, and I was asked from the Finnish side, okay, now will this change as the Greens are out? And from the discussions I have with all the businesses, especially the large industrial companies in Germany, it's not a political question anymore. It's actually an economic reality.
And why is it so?
I mean, it's
apparently important for Germany.
Yeah. I mean, of course, it's fighting the climate change. That's one. But it's also a cost question, like the transition of the German energy system to a clean energy system will cost about a third of what we are predicted to have negative impacts of climate change for the German economy. But then there is also, Germany is, for example, very different in terms of energy mix compared to Finland. We have natural gas so far having a much bigger part of the energy mix. 50% of German homes are heated with gas. 30% of the industry use gas. And there is a lot of energy-intense industry in Germany. And it's not only a German problem. Like if we lose, for example, the chemical industry in Germany, then we will have problems getting enough, you know, gassy-desi, as we say in Finland, the hand disinfections. There is going to be shortages in medicines and every. I mean, the chemical industry says chemistry is everywhere, and it's actually true. Mm. So we have cost. We are fighting the climate change. We have the necessity that. I mean, Germany is going through a triple energy transition, right? They have decided to give up nuclear. Mm. They have decided that they want to give up coal. And they have decided that they don't use Russian natural gas anymore. Mm. So there's not a lot of energy vectors left anymore, right? So that's also, it's a bit like you just have to take hydrogen. Let's take green steel as an example. It's highly unlikely that we can have tariffs on Chinese green steel to protect dirty European steel, mm. right? You just can't do that politically. And it's not only that, it's in Germany specifically, the biggest challenge in Germany is the high level of energy prices. They need to get that down somehow. And it's actually not a Germany question, but it's actually a competitiveness question for whole Europe. Mm. So you have companies like Salzgitter, big steel company. They said hydrogen is the only way forward. And I think the biggest question marks that people still tend to have in Germany is not about do we go into a hydrogen economy, is about whether is molecular hydrogen going to be a possible solution in long term, or is it more like derivatives such as green ammonia or e-methanol, e-methane, and so on?
Germany is a big European country and an industrial powerhouse in many, many, many sectors. Surely Germany can do this all by itself, maybe adding some subsidies to boost this transition. So why would Germany need others to realize this transition to hydrogen?
It's two things. Actually, when I talk to the German officials, they have a mindset that's much bigger than Germany only. They're looking for, like, how can we build a free and industrious Europe, right? And they are honestly wanting to work together for the common benefit of all. Of course, they're also thinking, how can I keep the jobs mm-hmm. in Germany, right? But for example, in our Finnish interest, Germany is our biggest import market. Mm. And we know that's actually Finnwerder has calculated that if the German GDP increases by 1%, Finnish exports to Germany increase by 4%. Mm. In Finland, we have 1 million jobs that depend on exports. So it's also our interest that Germany keeps its industry. But the fact is, when you look at the forecasted need for hydrogen, which is between 90 and 140 terawatt hours in 2030, Germany can produce maximum half of that itself. Mm. The country has the size of Finland, but 20 times the inhabitants almost. Mm. In Finland, we have space. We have a lot of green energy. We have biogenous CO2. That's all stuff that Germany doesn't really have. Yeah. And that is why Germany is building all these partnerships. So, for example, the Danish have been super active now. They just decided that Denmark will support the pipeline that is built between Denmark and Germany with 2 billion euros. So that's the Danish government actually investing and so on. Actually, the Baltic Sea and especially Finland has been identified as the top potential, if we want in Finland, mm-hmm. potential hydrogen supplier. And then the second one is the Southwest Corridor, which comes from Spain.
So it sounds like Germany cannot do this alone. And if Germany cannot do it alone, nobody else in Europe can do it alone either. So should we have this kind of a, let's say, hydrogen Hanseatic League around the Baltic Sea, for example, to satisfy Germany's demands as an off-taker and also getting the ball rolling in the green transition to high hydrogen as well, maybe to ward off China and US in competition in general as well? What do you see about this kind of idea as business opportunities?
I think the Hanseatic League is actually not a bad comparison because the Hanseatic League brought welfare to all the cities that were part of it. And the Hanseatic League also had a security policy aspect. They were actually defending their cities and their routes. And if you think about all of the countries in the Baltic Sea, are exporting and do a lot of business with Germany. And then on the other hand, of course, for those countries, including Finland, it's important that we want to keep value add in our country. Mm. You know, in Finland, I often hear, for some reason, the comparison to Congo, right? We don't want to become a hydrogen Congo, which is, of course, very clear. But then I ask, how about if it would become a hydrogen Norway, right? Or if you think about security policy, a hydrogen Kuwait.
So this hydrogen Congo would mean just an exporter of the raw material.
With no value add and no benefits keeping staying in the country.
And what Norway? And
well, if you look, that Norway has done economically super well by exporting, selling energy to the rest of the world, right? And when we look at the current business cases, even if you add transportation costs of 20, 25 cents per kilo through a pipeline to Germany, we would have pretty nice margins. And of course, especially if we continue to have negative electricity hours, and then what would be best to produce hydrogen with negative electricity and then sell that to the Germans. But it's not only about that. We're getting investments into Finland already. We have German companies investing in hydrogen production, in wind park development already now. They have made planning reservations, they've been granted planning reservations, Oulu, Nivala, Abo Wind, for example, Energiequelle and so on. But then it's also about adding the value in the country. So I can do derivatives, I can do SAF, sustainable air fuels, I can do e-fuels in general, but I can also, for example, do direct reduced iron. Because that's another discussion that's going in Germany right now.
Green steel.
Steel, yeah. Does it make sense to have steel production in Germany in places where we used to have coal and we used to have ore, but none of those we have anymore? And that's actually, German industry is open to that, to importing like DRI, for example, from Finland. So Blasa Green Steel in Inco is going exactly into that same thing. But the problem is, so we need to make the case and prove and be active and known in Germany. Finland as a clean, affordable energy country is not known in Germany. So instead of discussing this as an either or and not doing anything until we get all value add here, we should do both so that then we can get known in Germany also as a supplier of affordable energy. And then we do, as we already see, we have investments coming here. One more thing is this, coming back to the Hanseatic lead, one more thing is the political and security policy side, because rarely before, maybe never before, have we as Finland had the possibility to be critically important to a country like Germany. And that can have implications on European policy, that can have implications on security policy directly. If we are a critical system, critical supplier of something for the European industry, then that's a very good strategic position from the security position viewed to be in.
What is your advice to investors and firms that are looking to realize the hydrogen economy? Is this just risky, uncertain issues here as well? So,
I mean, when we talk about hydrogen economy, it sounds like it's one economy. But if you look at markets, you actually have the ammonia market, you have the hydrogen market, you have this and this and that. My first advice would be actually go to Germany and have a look on how far and with what speed the hydrogen economy is being developed there. Of course, join the hydrogen group of the German-Finnish Chamber of Commerce, because we do, you know, we arrange trips, we bring the companies together. But then if I see, at least from the business side, both on the offtake side in Germany as on the Finnish side, everybody seems to be starting with derivatives. Ammonia seems to be very big or become very big. There is also already import structure being built on in the German harbors for that, crackers or terminals. And then there is like, already, Germany has this dual auction system. Yeah, I'm auctioning the purchase, the off-taker side, and I'm auctioning the producer side. And as in the beginning, the producers will have need more higher prices than the off-takers are ready to pay. They subsidize in between, right? So have a look at that system. The first auctions have already been done. And that's, again, stuff that can give you the security you need to work with investors and get your financing costs down.
In the beginning, you mentioned we are not going to hydrogen winter, in your opinion.
So, I mean, I would say let's all be realistic. Yes, of course, there are still also technical questions about how to transport molecular hydrogen. So let's not overhype thing, but let's not take every signal that might be showing that hydrogen is not happening for granted. I give you one example. ThyssenKrupp, big German steel company, announced that they are going to go for electrification instead of using hydrogen for the production of green steel.
Hmm.
First reaction was, okay, this shows the hydrogen economy is going to collapse.
Hmm.
If you look at the backgrounds, you see ThyssenKrupp has a new investor, and that new investor wants to sell green electricity to ThyssenKrupp. So, of course, they make the decision then that they would move over to electrification, which is a viable alternative, right?
Hmm.
But let's do like the fact checks on everything and not just, you know, go for every headline that we read. So one risk I see is that here in Finland, especially the public side is doesn't really want to take too much risks. So we might be ending up in a situation that we are waiting and waiting and waiting for the right entry point, and then the window is closed. Because, of course, the margins are going to be bigger in the beginning. And if we decide now we're going to enter the hydrogen economy in 10 years from now, we are going to face competitors who have already gained economies of scale, and then we won't be competitive necessarily. So I think that's a challenge we might have here. It's a contrast to, for example, data centers, because data centers don't require too much, you know, public hand infrastructure. Yes, the grids, but they're there already. So we are now building a lot of data centers that will employ people when they're constructed, but then you just have a handful of people, a handful of jobs, and no added value to Finland. Then if you look at the hydrogen side, if you would have a hydrogen production, even if it's just selling derivatives or hydrogen itself, you can make a margin with every kilo yourself for the rest of your lifetime.
So there's an upside risk as well.
Absolutely. And I think that's like a thing which Finns and Germans sometimes have in common, that for us, risk is primarily a negative thing. And if you look at like a startup mentality or the Silicon Valley, or so, risk means opportunity.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hydrogen Valley podcast. In the next episode, I explore how green hydrogen is produced and what bottlenecks we need to solve so that we can ramp up the scale of production. My expert guests are Associate Professor Tanja Kallio from Aalto University. She researches electrolysis technology, and Tuomo Rinne from P2X Solutions, that operates the first industrial scale green hydrogen production plant in Finland. Please subscribe, rate and share the podcast. It helps others find the show as well, and you get more bang for your tax euros. We gratefully acknowledge the financial support from the Department of Industrial Engineering and Management at Aalto University for the production of this podcast. Baltic Sea H2 Hydrogen Valley project, in turn, is co-funded by the European Union through the Clean Hydrogen Partnership and its members. The podcast tune song is Limit 70 by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com and is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 4.0 license. This episode of the Hydrogen Valley podcast was scripted, recorded, edited, mixed, and hosted by me, Mikko Heiskala. Till next time.